let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, coast to coast. Thank you for joining us on the program today. Some may believe it's not possible for a school principal to live a glamorous and exciting life, but Daryl Unash, our guest on the program today, proves them wrong. Far from being boring, straight-laced, and narrow in his thinking, he's gone from growing up on a farm in Minnesota to earning a PhD, marrying a beautiful woman, having a family, getting his pilot's license, and traveling to dozens of countries. But before doing all of that, he had to trudge through deep snow for 5 months of the year just to get to school, which didn't stop him from continuing past eighth grade. That's when most kids quit. And looking back at life in America over the past 75 years, in his book, Principally Driven, a provocative account of a full and exciting life, he pays particular attention to its education system, sharing how important a teacher is in the life of a student, being impartial, congenial, and willing to help make a lasting impression on students who are at a pivotal stage in their lives, and he says it's more important today than ever before. Dyer examines the virtues of growing up in a rural community and celebrates the discoveries he's made in expanding his horizons. Dyer earned a PhD in educational leadership from Northwestern University. He's been a public and private school administrator and college instructor. He's a visionary, philosopher, historian, advisor, political activist, pilot, international traveler, currently living near Miami, Florida. Daryl Unash, author of Principally Driven, a provocative account of a full and exciting life, is our guest on This Week in America. Daryl, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here today and to be able to talk to people throughout the country because I feel very strongly about the areas I'll be talking about today and in responding to your questions. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, you're welcome, and it's going to be a fascinating conversation because education is so much in the news today, so many topics out there to discuss. Many of these are controversial. Is the book based on controversy? I'm sure there will be some controversy in the book, but was it based on controversy?
And to some extent, but I guess didn't really think too much about it being that way. Mostly I wanted to reveal some of the conclusions I've come to, some of the observations I've made, and just create a book that could be a legacy for me. In other words, I would hope that my kids and grandkids would read the book and see what it was like to be alive and working and surviving on a farm in the northern part of the United States in Minnesota. And I think I have achieved that, and I've done a lot of other things too in the book to make things interesting and to talk about some areas that I have an interest in. So it's been a great experience for me to write the book and to be able to share it with others as I'm doing today.
Well, we learn about you in the background, and once again, a principle that's not boring. This is a principle that you would like to have had in your schooling, your educational days, and we get your input sort of comparing different generations in school and what it was like and your thoughts on what's happening in the classroom today. Talk about point of view on various current issues. What are some of the issues that really are striking to you that we really need to address as a country? And it's difficult for us because we seem to be totally split as a country right now.
Well, let me say, too, that before I get too deep into some of this, that I want to talk about a mixture of history, which is what the book is, today and what is going to be tomorrow and beyond. And I hope as people read the book that they'll think about that and they'll be reflective and they'll celebrate what we have today, what we've gained over the years. I hope they'll be introspective and analytical and non-judgmental and non-committal and realize how things have changed. I was thinking, for example, when I was a child, drinking coffee was bad because it would stunt your growth.
Oh, yes,
said.
Yes.
And eating a lot of chocolate wasn't good for you either. Well, I don't know. I continue to eat chocolate. It's one of my favorite things. And then just think about and evaluate your views and try to understand why others think and believe as they do, because things do change and people have many different views. That's what makes our country great, I think. And each of us is a little different from everybody else, which makes life interesting. But the book is also my life, starting in the 40s and 50s, and how it was so different. A farm was not a very clean place. It was all hard work. We didn't have a lot of machinery like we do today. But I want to help people understand what life was like in the past and create this legacy. And if you're asking me to talk about some of the areas in education and other areas that were fascinating to me and interesting to me, one I was thinking about this morning. Halloween is important to kids today, and it was very important to us when I was a child. It was kind of interesting what we did and where the trick-or-treat thing came from. On Halloween, we would paint the windows of the farm area people and make it kind of something they had to clean up. But what was very difficult after Halloween was what we had done. I live in a hilly country, and we used to push wagons down the hill, and then the farmer would have to go and pull the wagon back up the hill into the farm. And another thing we did was to tip the toilets over. And we did not have plumbing in my school, my one-room schoolhouse. And so there was one for the girls and one for the guys, and we would tip the girls over, at least on one occasion I recall. And, of course, you know what that means. There's only one other place for the girls to go.
Yep.
And I was kind of mischievous in those days. And one of the things I did was make things very difficult for the girls. I went out and urinated around the hole. And you know what that would mean for the girls? So she went in. They all went in and complained to the teacher what the guys had done. And she called us in. The teacher called all our guys in and said, "Okay, now, who did this?" And we all sat there and looked at each other, and nobody would say a word. "Well, all right, you're going to get in real trouble now if you don't tell me you did it." Well, we didn't. And nobody squealed on me either that I was the guy that did it. And of course, I don't know how it all came out, except she kept us in for a period of time as punishment. But anyway, that was part of, that's just a small piece, I guess, of what it meant to be on a farm. And I was happy to be able to graduate from the eighth grade, which is what farm kids did, because they stayed and worked on the farm.
Yes.
They didn't go to school until about the time that I was ready to start to high school. There was no way to go, because you had to take the bus, and there wasn't a bus until I graduated from eighth grade. And so I was able to graduate from high school and then go on to college. And I think that it was tough, because I always felt we were kind of prejudiced or biased against. There was bias against us on the part of the city kids, because they looked down on us.
Yes.
And I had kind of a joke of the way to handle this. And I said, "Yeah, we're the farm kids. We scrape the manure off our shoes before we come into the school in the morning." And it was meant to be sort of a joke, and I used to say that once in a while.
Well, but that sort of breaks the ice, doesn't it? That's where humor comes in handy. You can sort of take these prejudices, these bias that somebody has, and once you get them laughing, that's sort of a common language, isn't it? Did that warm them up when, okay, the kid's got a sense of humor?
Yeah. Well, in writing the book, I talked about a lot of different trends that we've come through.
Yes.
And one of them is the presidents. I speak about a number of presidents that we've had, many of whom I have great admiration for. For example, President Truman, I probably wouldn't have voted for. I was too young to vote for him anyway. But when I see what he did in ending World War II by bombing Nagasaki and Hiroshima, so that our soldiers didn't have to march into Tokyo and kill a lot of people, and a lot of them being killed. He ended the war. And I also had great admiration for him because he went into South Korea and protected them from the North Koreans taking over South Korea. And then he had a very stormy relationship with MacArthur, who was admired by Americans and was admired by me and still is. But he had a lot of differences with MacArthur, and finally decided he had to fire him. So they agreed to meet in Guam for the meeting to talk about it. And as they flew towards Guam, of course, Truman was flying from this direction, and MacArthur was flying from his direction of Asia. And as they got there, they arrived at the same time. MacArthur had no respect at all for Truman. He disliked him greatly, and he wouldn't land. And the practice is that the person of high rank lands last. Well, Truman finally had to call MacArthur on the phone and order him to land, which he did. And Truman's comment was, "I don't care what the SOB thinks of Harry Truman, but he is not going to insult the President of the United States." And that has been quoted and shows what kind of spunk that Truman had.
Yes. And one of the many stories.
I talk about Truman and MacArthur in the book somewhat. And MacArthur, of course, went home to a standing ovation everywhere he went. The people of the United States loved him, and he was finally spoke to Congress. And when he ended, he made a comment that has never been forgotten. Old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And that's what he did. He went back home and really wasn't visible at all after that. And a few years later, died. Another thing I did in the book was to talk about trends and implications. And I found the prices of things back in the 30s, which, of course, is, 70, quite a few years ago.
Yes.
And let's see. I'll get to that in a second.
I want to mention...
prices.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The book is principally driven. So if you're listening and wondering, wow, this sounds like this would be an interesting read. Well, first of all, it is. The book is principally driven, a provocative account of a full and exciting life by Daryl Unash, our guest on the program. That's UNNASCH. The book's available at Amazon, principally driven. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to Daryl's book information at Amazon. So, Daryl, go back. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to let people know the name of the book and where they could purchase it.
Okay, thank you. I listed the prices of a number of things in the 30s, which shows what things were like then compared to now. President Roosevelt outlawed marijuana in the 30s. Which is kind of interesting compared to what's going on today. The Yankees won the World Series. I guess they never lose. life expectancy was 59.7. A new home cost $4,100. Wow. The average income was $1,788 a year. A new car cost $760. Rent was $26 a month. Tuition to Harvard was $420 a year. Hamburger was 12 cents a pound, and I worked on one occasion for 60 cents per hour. Of course, I wasn't working in the 30s yet. I was too young for that. And my grandfather used to talk to me about working for a dollar a day, if you can believe it. But there were other trends. Everything, I think, tends to be bigger today and more complex.
Well, how
grocery stores I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's talk about grocery stores, because that's fascinating what they are today. They're like mini cities when you walk into them.
Yeah. I think about, of course, Publix is the store here in Florida, big store. And they are tearing them down and making them bigger, and then they incorporate other stores within the store, like Starbucks. You can go now to Publix to get your cup of coffee. On the other hand, cars are smaller but more complex and more luxurious.
Yes.
Although now that the sedans are smaller, we drive SUVs today, and some homes are huge, thousands and thousands of square feet, And another area that's as much larger, churches are getting larger. We have a lot of mega churches in the country. I read yesterday, I think it was 12 or 1300 mega churches. I go to one here in Florida where that was begun by a football coach back in the 70s in his living room. And they grew it. They had to build a church, and then he had to build another one. And today he has 11 churches here in the county that I live in, as well as the neighboring county. And there are 28,000 people in his
just
church
amazing.
On Sunday morning. Churches, actually.
Actually, that's just amazing when you think about that. You read about mega churches, and then you suddenly put a number like that, the thousands that that are members in that church. Dar Unash is our guest on the program. Unash, that's U-N-N-A-S-C-H. Time going by so quickly on the program. This is such a fascinating read on so many levels. Let's talk a little bit about kids. When you were going to school, when you were in the classroom and principaling in the schools around the country, and where they are today, what are some of the changes you've seen over the years with today's young people?
The change, the big change I saw is that kids don't read anymore. They don't read books. They don't go into the library and pick out a book to read. And an example of that is I had a speaker come into a high school I had in Michigan some years ago, and it was very interesting. The kids loved him. And he donated several boxes of his book because he had written a book, and he donated them. And believe it or not, I announced on the PA system, if you like a copy of his book, come to the office. We'll be happy to give you one. Do you know how many we gave away? Zero.
It's just incredible.
Kids, nobody came to get his book. It's really amazing what has happened. Kids don't read today. They don't go to the library. They don't read unless you call reading on your cell phone. They don't read. And also, I see differences depending upon which group you belong to. I had a private school in California a few years ago. It was a private Christian school, very wealthy. And one day I went in to visit the physics class, and I walked in, I looked around, and I thought, whoa, what's going on here? The school was about 90% Caucasian and about 10% Asian. And there were 18 kids in the class, 17 of the kids were Asian, and one student was Caucasian. And that's a trend we have, I'm afraid, in the country today. I've heard others say, too, they go into the library, and there are non-Caucasian kids in their reading and doing their homework. And where are the Caucasian kids? I don't know, out talking on their phone, I guess, to their friends. So that's a direction that our country is going. Whether I'm not trying to project a value here, it's just a fact of life that that's the way things are moving. And if we want to talk about other directions with kids, when I first started, if a child misbehaved, he got into real trouble with me. And I remember an elementary school I had, and I had a six-year-old child. I don't know what kind of home he came from, because he was not very well behaved. He would stand in the middle of a hall in school and swear at the teachers, calling them various four-letter words. And it was so bad, I would have to take him and hold him on my lap to get him under control till we got the parents in there who could take him home. We eventually took them to court because it was so bad. But and today, the difference is kids still misbehave, and sometimes misbehave badly. You can't do anything with them. You can't touch them. If you touch them, you get into trouble. Everything has to be talk, talk, talk. Well, you and I know, and we all know, the talking alone doesn't get the job done. Sometimes you have to apply some other kinds of pressure on the kids. And at the time I retired from education, it was getting even worse. And schools were employing specialists to help in dealing with these kids. And we frequently have to just call the parents and have them come and take the child home. So I see that as a change also. And we still try to help kids to have fun and to enjoy life and celebrate what's going on. And for a while here, a year or so ago, we were referring to college kids as snowflakes. I couldn't think of the word for them.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Because they were so weak. And if they had, it was one little stressful thing, they'd go off in the corner and cry. And I think, as I recall, when we had the election back in 16, some of them were very unhappy with the results. And they were back in the somewhere in the corner of the university crying. Well, that's not the way college students used to conduct themselves. We were, especially the guys, were big and strong. And even the students in law school, they insisted that they'd call the class for several days so the kids could just mourn over whatever was going on. And you wonder what kind of a lawyer they're going to make if they have to behave this way.
If you sob in the the courtroom, that's not the best of demeanor in front of the judge. There are so many interesting stories and trends and observations. You've got education, travel, politics, military, history, spirituality, philosophy, trends. It's all in Dar's book. The book is Principally Driven, A Provocative Account of a Full and Exciting Life. I've got a minute or so left in the program, and if you're thinking, I like the way this guy thinks, well, the book is available, and you can get insight into to Dar and into his years in education. But I think sort of summing it up, when you retire as a principal, for some reason you're brought back, you're entering the school, and the students give you a standing ovation. And I know you say that's one of the highlights of your career. Talk about that, because what you did, that relationship that you had with the students, that was really powerful, wasn't it, on both sides? The students felt that, and you felt that.
Well, it was, because I love kids, and I think they knew I loved them. I was not a pushover, though. I didn't let kids get away with things, and there were times I had to get pretty strict with them. But I was fortunate enough at that time to be in a very nice school. It was a suburb of Chicago known as River Forest. And I was there, I think, 7 years. And I got to know kids pretty well. In fact, I would go at the end of every year, go into an elementary school because I was in a middle school. I'd go into the elementary school and talk to the kids that were going to come over the next year, and I could pick out the ones that had a brother or sister in my school because of the similarity. But anyway, when I retired, of course, I left the school, and I went to another school in another state because, well, I just did. And I came back in October, which meant that the school was in session for a couple months. And they didn't know I was coming back for a visit, that I parked in the parking lot. And I went into the gymnasium because that's where they ate lunch. And I walked in the door, and they stood up and gave me a standing ovation of clapping and shouting. And it just absolutely floored me because I didn't expect them to do that. And I felt such love. And I'm that kind of a person. And it was just one of the highlights of my whole career to think that the kids would do this.
And if you wonder if you're making an impact on young people, and something like that happens and you know, okay, this has been time well spent because I have reached out, they're reaching out back, and we do have this bond. Daryl Unash is our guest on the program. The book is Principally Driven, A Provocative Account of a Full and Exciting Life. Unash is UNNASCH. Just look for the book Principally Driven at Amazon. You can go on directly to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on to get information on the book. Dar, it's been a pleasure having you with us. Hopefully we can do it again. So many great stories in the book, so many great ideas, your perspective of education. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure, and there's many other things outside of education I could talk about, but I realize I'm out of time. So thank you. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Well,
thank you.
When we run out of time, then we'll have to continue that. So many more things that you want to talk about that I want to hear and listen to you talk about. And we will do this again with Dar Unash, our guest on the program. Principally Driven, A Provocative Account of a Full and Exciting Life is his book. You'll find information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.